On this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show, we discussed the Clash Royale World Championships last week, all the news that happened this week, and some of our favorite games, including Getting Over It and much more. Stick with us.
I know a magical place we could go, so close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here. Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number 333, recorded on December 7th, 2017. Thanks a ton for downloading the show. If this is the first time you've listened to the Touch Arcade Show, welcome. I'm Eli, and with me is Jared. Between the two of us, we have about 20 years of experience covering mobile games. We work at toucharcade.com, which is the best place to go for all your really mobile gaming news stuff. We're an iOS specific site, but like we dabble in Android and like even Switch stuff. So if you like gaming on the go, toucharcade.com is the website to visit. We are primarily supported by Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/toucharcade. If you're not into the Patreon thing but still want to support what we do, we'd really love it if you do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. We also have got a Twitch channel and a Discord at twitch.tv/toucharcade and discord.gg/toucharcade. We appreciate iTunes reviews. And if you want to send us an email, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. Jared, do you have that review handy of the one that dude left us? I think that was last week or the week before. This made me laugh so hard when I got it.
Yeah, it's titled, this is from Racer Homie in the USA. It's an okay show for games. I know the App Store Today section is awesome, but it's nice to get third-party recommendations. I hope you guys continue for a long time. 3 stars.
I just laughed because, like, usually with podcast reviews, it's like you either get people that are like 5 stars, love it, listen to it every week,
yeah,
like you look forward to it every time it goes up, or 1 star, hosts are boring, or you know, whatever else. Not like 3 stars, okay podcast.
Definitely very okay.
Very. So thanks for listening to this very middle-of-the-road iOS games podcast. I hope that we do not exceed your expectations or fall below your mediocre expectations.
We want to hover right around the 3-star mark.
Yeah, today's episode. So if you want to send us an email, I don't know if I already said this or not, but podcast@toucharcade.com. And with that, we can get the show on the road here. Real quick, I just wanted to mention something that this has nothing to do with iOS games, but I learned about it on a podcast that I was listening to while I was in the air. And it was a really cool thing. So the Freakonomics podcast, I love. It's a podcast about like numbers and, you know, like the weird accounting side of everything. Mm-hmm. So recently they did an episode on these things called prize-linked savings accounts, and I had no idea what they were. And basically what it amounts to, here's like the 30-second elevator pitch, is that it's this thing is sweeping across the United States, and it's already existing in a lot of countries where effectively you put money into a savings account. And like, you know how most banks you pay like 0.01% interest, which at the end of the year is like, oh, cool, I got a dollar or something like that. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
So you basically forfeit your interest. So you get zero interest, but for every like X amount or every X dollars you have in your bank account, like a lot of them is like 25 or whatever, you get one draw from their prize raffle that they do. And every bank's different with regards to like whether they do it like monthly or quarterly or yearly or whatever. So say you've got like $100 in your savings account and your bank gives chances for every 25, you get 4 entries into their raffle where you effectively win everyone's interest.
Wow.
So I was like, I listened to this podcast and I was like, holy shit, like this is the most amazing thing ever. Like, why isn't everyone doing this? And it turns out like it's not legal in most states, but it is legal in some. So if you're interested in kind of an interesting kind of savings account kind of thing, like definitely Google prize-linked savings account and see if they're available in your states. Like, there's a lot of credit unions that are doing them to get people that are interested in it. But I was like, damn, that is such a cool idea. Like, because everyone that I told this to afterwards is like, I've never heard of that before. That's really a thing. That's awesome. So just trying to spread awareness. Like, I don't care who you sign up with. I'm not making any money off this. I don't work for banks or anything, but you know, just I thought it was really cool. So
sounds more stable than relying on Social Security when we're retirement age.
Yes. But anyway, so this last weekend I was at the Clash Royale, the Clash Royale Crown Championship World Finals, which is quite a mouthful. We've been trying to cover esports in a more, I don't know, mobile esports is such a weird thing. Yeah. You know, which I feel like we've kind of talked about a bunch on the podcast. And like what's so strange about it is that esports in general, it seems like, is just like absolutely blowing up. You know, you look at how like, you know, the Overwatch League stuff and like even the PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and like some newer games that you wouldn't think would really lend themselves to being an esport. Just like the amount of money that's being sprayed into promoting these games and running these events and everything else is just nuts. So we've been kind of trying to boost the kind of amount of coverage that we have of mobile esports stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and as part of that has been, you know, like reaching out to these different companies, because like a lot of these people are even the supercells are like desperate to get anyone to talk about these events that they're doing. Yeah, because everyone that's covering esports stuff is interested in like the Overwatch League and the you know, Hearthstone Championships and like these bigger, more blown out, like, you know, quote unquote, like real game events, right? But in reality, like the event that Supercell put on is bananas. I mean, like I've got you know, all sorts of photos on the site. There's an overview video and all this other stuff. Like, so just real quick to describe what the kind of venue looked like. Let me see if I'm looking at photos on my iPad to find a cool one so I can just kind of describe what it looks like when it's in motion and playing.
All right, looks, so, the arena looks crazy.
So this is bananas. Like the amount of effort that they put into making this set for the Clash Royale Championships was just bananas. So imagine you're looking out over like, I don't know, like just a typical arena. Like I feel like most cities have these where, you know, like where they play basketball, but they can roll the basketball hoops out and it's just a big place for concerts or whatever. Right. Yeah. So the arena, like no basketball hoops or anything, but instead just an open floor, and the floor has a overhead 3D projection of Clash Royale being played. And on each opposite side of that, there are two like little towers that look like little King's Towers in Clash Royale, and that's where the players stand and play a little iPad, or I don't know if it's a, what, you know, what client they're playing on, or but play the game on top of these podiums, right? Mm-hmm. And on these tower-like podiums, there's a little elixir meter for the resources that, you know, they can use in game to play cards. There's two giant like blow-up heads of the kings on each side that match the color. The whole lighting of the arena is based on the red and blue color of each side. And between games, when they're when the floor isn't showing the actual gameplay and stuff, like all the screens and everything meld together to have like this like river flowing through it for the first stage. And then like, so if you ever played Clash Royale, they as you rank up in arenas, the arenas get like more and more, I don't know, like cool looking or whatever. So you start out in the first one's like grass with a river, and then the next one is like a goblin jungle, and then the one after that is like a kind of magma rocky kind of volcano looking thing. And so in each tier of the tournament, they ranked up to a different arena, and all the 3D projection stuff changed. Wow. And it was all super animated stuff. So like between games, like the play field of the game would kind of fade away, and like lava would bubble up, and then like little islands of rock would extend out from each of the like the pedestals that the players were on, so they could walk back into the middle or and out and stuff. And it was just like the production value of this was just absolutely unlike anything that I've ever seen before at any event ever.
Wow.
Which I mean, like seriously, like I mean talking like going to like WWE events, like you know, like big like Deadmau5 concerts, and you know, like like events where the entire shtick is the production value, like couldn't hold a candle to like what Supercell put together with this Clash Royale thing. Which is unbelievable. And the worst part was, like, I really don't think it translated that well on stream. Like, I went back and kind of, like, paged through the video on demand of the stream thing. And, like yeah, I can see a 3D projection and, like, you know, the tighter camera angles of the cool stuff. But, like, just being there was just remarkable. I don't know. Like, I really wish that this kind of thing would catch on and make it so it's like, oh, cool, the Clash Royale thing's in Sacramento. Like, you know, I'm going to, you know, go head up there and check it out. Or, oh, it's in Chicago. Like, let me, you know, go.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool to do, like, a traveling arena show, like a big long tournament or something like that.
Yeah, but instead, like, these big things are, like, once a year or whatever. So, yeah. I don't know.
They did something similar with that with skateboarding, which for a long time would have, like, a handful of big, you know, competitions throughout the year. And then the Street League came along, and they created, like, a season of whatever it was. I think there's four major tournaments and then like a handful of like just road shows that, you know, qualifying things that lead up to the bigger tournaments or whatever. But they travel to different cities and stuff like that and set up, you know, these skate parks and these arenas and stuff. I feel like something similar would be really cool traveling around the world with something like this, where it's like, hey, come down to the qualifier in the arena. You could either spectate or you could, you know, try and enter or whatever. And then, you know, have bigger kind of championship tournaments that kind of culminate in like, you know, a Super Bowl of Clash Royale or something like that. There's a lot of really neat things that you could do with the esports, the way it's blown up. So,
well, so what's interesting about this is that, so the way that they qualified people was actually just playing the challenge mode inside of Clash Royale.
Oh, really?
So they had just shy of 28 million people like participate in the lower levels of this tournament. So it was, the challenge was to get 20 wins before 3 losses, which, if anyone's ever played like any kind of game, like of any kind, like that, that kind of win percentage is just out of this world. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was how they did it. And like, what was interesting is talking to the, I think the guy's name was Tim, maybe, who handles, their esports at Supercell, was that he was saying that, cause I always ask people that are doing this esports stuff. I'm like, so what I feel like is going to be the major problem for esports as like this bubble, if you want to call it that, continues to grow, is that, and I feel like I've said this exact same thing on this podcast before, is that you reach a point where even if you're super interested in video games, like you can only pay attention to so many games at once.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the good comparison being like, if you follow football, you probably don't follow hockey because, you know, like you just only have so much time in a week to follow these sports and like the players and things like that going on.
Yeah.
And in esports, there's just so much more going on that it's crazy. So I was kind of asking him, like, how do you like, what's the big plan for how Supercell is going to, you know, fight for that mind space, basically, of people that are interested in esports in general.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually kind of a more interesting problem than I had actually thought, because it seemed like one of the big things that like they were kind of wrestling against with this was that the guy kind of hinted at, he thought that there might have been, of the 28 million people, he wasn't sure how many of those people really realized that like what they were playing for was a chance to be at this, and instead we're just like, oh, all right, it's a weekly challenge, yeah, cool, play it, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of an interesting problem to think about, when like when you have that many people playing a game.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what their daily active user amount is right now, but I'm sure it's just insane. You know, like,
yeah,
like people are just going to play the challenge because it's like, oh, the new challenge is up. Yeah, let me play this. Like, it's not like, oh, shit, like this is my chance to make it into, you know, this world championship. I'm going to like really practice and sit down and think about this and like really play the serious business style, you know, which I don't know. Like, it's interesting that even Supercell has, which, you know, is the, I don't know where they stand in money compared to the rest of them, but it seems like as far as like player base is
they're up there.
One of the biggest mobile game companies in the world, if not the biggest.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
You could accidentally work your way into this grand championship and find yourself in London and then on to win the whole thing. And you didn't even realize that you had been signing up for it.
Yeah. Like, so I was thinking about it afterwards, like as like being like the movie, The Last Starfighter, right? Where it's just like, just imagine you're this like, you know, whiz kid Clash Royale player. And you know, you're just playing the game like between classes or like on the toilet or whatever. And it's just like, and then like you get your 20 wins.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, I don't know what happens then. Like, someone from Supercell calls you and is like, hey, you know, come on down. You're a potential world champion or whatever.
That'd be cool.
Like that. I don't know. Like, the whole thing is really neat. And like, I'm not a Clash Royale player. Like, I don't really, of this kind of style of game. Like, it just doesn't really appeal to me that much, but like watching it was super fun. All the players were super cool. Everyone there that was there was really neat. I spent the whole day at the event and only found out just before the last game started there was beer there, which
dope.
I was like, oh god, I could have spent so much money on stadium beers. But really cool overall. And like, to go back to like what I was kind of talking about at the start, like handling mobile esports, is that like I really think that like people don't realize just how cool this stuff really is. Like, I think it's very easy to dismiss and be like, oh, esports, I roll, everyone's doing esports now, like who gives a shit.
But that's what I do.
I mean, being at this event, like talking to the moms of these kids and stuff like this, like it is such a cool community. And like, I really, again, this is a bad time of year because we're super busy with all the end of the year stuff, but like I really want to devote like serious effort towards raising awareness of the fact that like this is way cooler than people think it is. And
I've been coming around to it just through our own coverage, because I was the one that was laughing things off like it's gonna be a dumb fad and who actually cares about this stuff. But I think it's neat. I don't know, to be honest. I wish it revolved around games that I actually played and cared about myself. But
See, like for me, like the Hearthstone stuff is super fun because I really like Hearthstone. So like when they do any event, I watch all of them because I like the event, like the events. Blizzard's super cool, so everything else. So I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully covering it more opens more doors for us to do more cool shit. So that's always the goal of doing anything. I don't know. Just look up, just type into Google Clash Royale Touch Arcade, and you'll probably see all the recent stories we posted about it. Really cool events. Yeah, I hope to be involved in more stuff that they're doing. So Apple posted their Game of the Year stuff. Already the iTunes feature actually went up, so we're recording on Thursday, so you're listening to this on Friday. It went up yesterday morning very, very early. We posted about it. What's interesting is that they have different Game of the Years per region. So like, we wrote up this article based on like the US region, and like you could hear the sonic boom from 100 miles away of people well actualing us on on the fact that like The Witness didn't actually get iPad Game of the Year in other regions and stuff like that. So sorry.
I don't know. I guess it makes sense maybe to split things out regionally because certain things are
weird and dumb to me, but
way more popular. But I don't know. I also think it's kind of strange where a game is available everywhere. Like, why is The Witness not as good in Canada or whatever, you know? So I don't know.
I think Apple has different editorial teams and each team like handled their picks, but still it seems very strange to me that like why, if that's the case, like why wouldn't everyone be like, all right, you know, put together your 10 finalists and then we're going to get in a big, like, you know, video conference meeting or whatever, and we're going to hash out like what we think the best one is, because it sends like a really mixed message, right? Like especially if, you know, if we're writing about like, oh, these are the best games, you're like, oh, cool. Like, let me check out the App Store and like, look at this feature. And it's like, oh, these aren't the best games. Like, what are these guys talking about? Very, very strange kind of thing. So anyway, Splitter Critters and The Witness, according to Apple, are the two best. It's iPhone and iPad Game of the Year, which difficult to argue against. We haven't really talked about our final decisions yet this year, but I personally don't know if I would push that hard towards The Witness being iPad Game of the Year just yet, because I don't like giving Game of the Year nods to ports.
Yeah, that's a tricky situation, especially with this year. There's so many ports and a lot of really good ones. But I usually like to try. That's what I like about Splitter Critters, is it feels like an iOS game first, whereas The Witness feels like a game that translates very well with touchscreen. But Splitter Critters is one of those things that's like, it wouldn't feel the same if you weren't, you know, moving things around with your own fingers on the touchscreen.
Well, and we've kind of said this before with like Game of the Year coverage, is that like the games we try to pick seem to be like, this game is outstanding and feels like it could really only exist on touch devices, which, I mean, I guess Splitter Critters, you could like draw the splits with your mouse or whatever, and like, you know, it'd be cool, which is not the same as like, you know, swiping the screen and like using your fingers to like move the pieces around and stuff like that. I mean, you do bring up a good point that this year has been a banner year for amazing ports. And The Witness is one of those games that's kind of weird, because I feel like with so many of these ports that we've been seeing, if we lived in a different universe where people would pay $20 for a game on the App Store, like, I feel like the iPad would have been the lead SKU for The Witness.
Yeah, I know.
Because, like, it's just one of those games, like, you know, and you know, I've since diddled around in the other versions of it, and like, playing with touch is just, it feels just better. Like, it feels like it makes more sense interacting with those puzzles in a touch device than it does with the mouse and stuff. And it's just kind of unfortunate that the dynamic has been totally shifted, where it's like, release on Steam and every other platform, milk as much money out as you can, and when you've hit your absolute cap from every promotion and Steam sale you can think of, then release on iOS.
I think it's weird too, because Jonathan Blow showed this running on an iPad in like 2014 or something. It was like quite a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the first ways that people saw the game, was it, you know, pitched as kind of like this mobile experience. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how this isn't the first time they've split, you know, they have an iPhone game of the year and an iPad game of the year. And I think that's cool and all, but I don't really see the differentiation between these two. Like, I don't necessarily think, I actually think both of them are probably better on the bigger screen, just because it's a bigger screen.
Yeah, for sure.
But I also don't think either of them are bad on the iPhone screen. Like, I played through The Witness on my phone and it was fine. And Splitter Critters is fine too, but they both would benefit from larger screens, just in a general sense. So I don't really, I don't know. I think it's kind of a weird way to differentiate them that way.
Yeah.
You can almost interchange them.
Yeah, I actually played Splitter Critters first on my iPad, and I didn't like it on my phone comparatively. I mean, not that it's a bad game, of course, but it's just like, you know, it just was, it just felt so much better, I thought, on the iPad with the interacting with all the little pieces and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I don't know. As part of their Game of the Year nods, they also release lists of the most downloaded games, both paid and free, for the course of the year. So real quick, just top 10 free iPhone games: Super Mario Run, 8-Ball Pool, Snake vs. Block, Balls, Word Cookie, Subway Surfers, Episode, Rolling Sky, Block Hexapuzzle, and Paper.io. What's interesting is that, so Super Mario Run, that's not surprising. 8-Ball Pool, which is Miniclip's thing, has just been killing it for years now. Snake versus Block and Balls and stuff, like, those were just like those little weird little micro games. Subway Surfers is still killing it. It's just always so interesting to me to see games like Subway Surfers still doing so well, when I feel like that could have been Temple Run if they had a better kind of update strategy.
Yeah.
Because, like, really, all Subway Surfers did was, like, out Temple Run, right?
Well, it's not like Temple Run didn't do well, but it's Subway Surfers by now has got to have been the bigger earner and the bit more downloads and stuff.
Right. So top paid iPhone games, I'll just read the top 10 here. If you want to see all of them, check out, you know, the site, or look at the, well, I don't think they publish these lists, so yeah, check out the sites to look at them all. But top paid iPhone games, Heads Up, Minecraft, Bloons, Tower Defense 5, Plague Inc., Monopoly Game, Geometry Dash, Monument Valley 2, The Game of Life, The Escapists, and Assassin's Creed Identity. With Grand Theft Auto San Andreas coming in at 11, which I was kind of surprised that a port of a game that's that old is doing that well.
That thing hangs around.
But Heads Up, dude, like, Heads Up has been the number one paid game for years now.
And I see why. I mean, it's like one of those things that it's one of those things that, like, almost everyone has on their phone, because when you're around with other people, it's like one of the funnest things to do.
Yeah.
And all you need is your phone. You know what I mean? That's what's so great about it. It's such a brilliant little thing. I think a lot of its initial popularity is due to it being associated with Ellen and stuff like that. But I think, without all that, it's still just such a clever game and a clever use of your device, and just fun and readily available, so people can just grab it whenever. Like, I don't know. It makes sense to me that it's been so popular for so long.
For sure. Yeah, the rest of these aren't really that big of a surprise if you look at the charts over the last course of the year. It's nice seeing Monument Valley 2 doing so well, because I think that, you know, sends a good signal, like, hey, if you make a very high-quality premium iPhone game, and you launch it with the full force of Apple's promotional engine, yeah. you can do really well.
Play the Escapist, game. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, Escapist on there, that's kind of a surprise. Plague Inc., of course, that game's been glued to the charts for a million years. So
yeah,
cool to see Geometry Dash doing so well. Because that's a super indie game too. So top free iPad games kind of pretty much more or less mirror the iPhone just in different order. So Super Mario Run, Roblox, Rolling Sky, Word Cookies, Bowmasters multiplayer game, Subway Surfers, Paper.io, Slither.io, Piano Tiles 2, Don't Step on the White Tile 2, say that 10 times fast, and then 8-Ball Pool is number 10.
Mario Run being the top game on iPad, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's just a lot of down to curiosity.
Yeah.
Although I've never played it on iPad myself, so maybe it's fine. But that game, I feel, is just geared for an iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, I fiddle around down. It's not bad on iPad, but it definitely feels like it should, like it's an iPhone game.
Yeah.
It's interesting seeing Roblox as number two, because I'm sure that that means this game has like far more cumulative players than Minecraft potentially.
Yeah.
Because if number two free is so exponentially more downloads than number two paid, you know, and we've just seen that over the years. You know, the .io games, not really a surprise. 8-Ball Pool, if you know, we saw that from the other one. I don't know how Piano Tiles is still a thing, but it is. interestingly enough, Clash Royale is number 12 free iPad, and where was it on the iPhone? I don't even. Oh, 17 overall iPhone.
It's
so
there.
Yeah. So the top paid iPad games, which again, there's not going to be any surprises here, I don't think, is. Minecraft, Geometry Dash, Five Nights at Freddy's Sister Location, Plune's Tower Defense 5 HD, The Escapist, Terraria, Five Nights at Freddy's, Goat Simulator, Monument Valley 2, and Heads Up.
I've never seen anyone play Heads Up on an iPad, but I want to now, yeah, especially kinda, the giant one.
It seems kind of weird. Like, it seems like it would just cover your whole head.
Yeah.
So cool! Cool to see The Escapist doing so well across both platforms. You know, Five Nights at Freddy's. Scott Cawthon's still killing it. Five Nights at Freddy's 2 is number 13, so he's got three of the top 25 paid iPad games, which it's got to be.
I wish these were published with the download numbers next to them.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I'm kind of curious of is like what the actual drop off is between number one and like number 20.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But you know, we know the paid numbers are small, so whatever. But I guess, you know, it's another year where the popular games stay popular, and there's a few breakouts other than that, but the charts kind of solidify the way they are, and breaking into them is more difficult than ever. So
yeah,
it is what it is. So I think that the most exciting news of the week, for me anyway, is the news that Portal is coming to the App Store via the ways of Bridge Constructor Portal. Jared, have you ever played Portal?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I straight up say in this article that I genuinely believe and will argue with people that Portal is the perfect video game.
It'd be in my top five of all time. It's that good.
It is such an amazing puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
That introduces the simple mechanic of using the portal gun, which if you've never played it, like the basic idea is like you get a very early on, you get a portal gun. You can, well, I guess first level you get a portal gun because it's the whole idea of the game. But like, so you shoot it and you can shoot it against the wall and like shoot once and get a, I think on the PC, it's like right click and left click to do the two different colors. But I could be wrong. I haven't played in a long time. So left click for a blue portal, right click for an orange portal. And then when you go through the blue one, you come out the orange one and vice versa.
Right.
It's just unbelievable how they take this super simple, basically like a physics puzzly concept and blow it out into just this unbelievable game universe. It introduces the character GLaDOS, who the year that Portal came out, which I think I put in the article, is 2011. No, that's probably earlier. I don't know. I guess I didn't write it in here, but that GLaDOS character won like best new video game character and like every award that had that category, and is in.
She's amazing.
It's like in a discussion for like the greatest video game character of all time. Any list will include GLaDOS in it. Yeah. So if you haven't played Portal, like I don't want to talk about it too much more because I don't want to spoil it for anyone. Because the experience from start to finish, like if you somehow manage to avoid Portal. You beautiful go creature that has never
find it anywhere and play it now.
Yeah, like
and find get it over with.
Find it.
It's available on everything.
I don't.
Part of the fun is I want to talk about a lot of spoilery things, and I feel like it's probably ran out of the statute of limitations on spoilers because it's such an old game. But at the same time, just in case there's anyone listening that hasn't played it. I don't want to ruin it for you, but one of the best experiences in my gaming life, for sure.
So consider this your warning, because when the game comes out, we will discuss it and probably involve Portal spoilers and stuff like that. So you have, this is coming out on the 20th, so you have a little under 2 weeks to play Portal. The game's only like 4 hours long.
Yeah, so, sure.
It is like it is the reason I like it so much, and this is not spoilery, but like it leaves you at the absolute perfect time. Like the credits roll in that game in a point that is so flawless that if I was teaching like a class on like where to end a piece of entertainment, like whether it's like a movie, TV show, video game, whatever, like it would be about Portal.
Yeah.
Because like you just hit the point where like the game has explored just unbelievable depths of what you can do with this portal gun. Like it's introduced this character, like the whole story's ramping up and everything else. And like, it just, I don't know. Amazing. Just absolutely incredible. Like I don't want to put out a money back guarantee on this because like, I'm sure that a lot of people will just take me up on it just to be a jerk. But like, it is a game that if I knew you in real life and you had not played Portal, and you bought Portal and you didn't enjoy it, I would give you your money back. Like
again, I would buy you the orange box to make you play Half-Life 2 also.
Oh yeah, well that's that too. Like that is how confident I am in what a good game Portal is. So
you know what's interesting about it? So when this was announced, it's like two brands you probably never would have imagined together ever. But then when you see it in action, you're like, wow, this makes a weird amount of sense.
Yeah, so like when you look at the screenshots of the Bridge Constructor Portal, like basically it's Bridge Constructor, which is, you know, a game of building bridges with the resources the game gives you inside of like certain design parameters and stuff like that. But it throws in like every weird little thing from Portal. And like originally When I first got the email and agreed to the embargo before they sent out like all the press kit stuff, I was like, oh, this is going to be some real dumb tie-in where they just like, you know, add portals to, you know, the Bridge Constructor thing and are going to like skin it like, you know, Aperture Science and stuff like that. But like, this looks off the chain. Like, this is so much cooler than what I was expecting just based on the single trailer and three screenshots. Like, I went from like my excitement level was like, oh shit, more Portal, like I am definitely playing this, to like I need this in my life right now. And cooler yet, it's launching on PC, Mac, and Linux too, so like this is not going to be like some dumb little throwaway free-to-play tie-in game. Like it's a real deal, full-blown game experience, because you know you don't see these simultaneous launches across other platforms if it's going to be like, you know, a dumb little mobile micro game. So I think very good signs across the board on Portal Bridge Constructor. I'm kind of curious what the pricing is going to be on this, because it's a simultaneous launch across all platforms using probably one of the most beloved IPs of gaming history.
Yeah.
And I really think that they could get away with being like, dude, it's $20. Buy it on whatever platform you want.
That'd be interesting if they went that route. I don't think they will, but
yeah,
it'd be cool.
It'll be interesting to see, because I feel like Valve can get away with that shit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But so for the sake of comparison, Bridge Constructor, which is, you know, there's so many bridge building games. Like I'm not qualified to say which one's the best, because like I play them all and I hit a point where it's just too hard for me and I just kind of stop. So like I never really hit the end game in any of these. But like Bridge Constructor, of the ones that I've played, is among the better ones.
Yeah.
And it fluctuates on the App Store between like $1 to $1.99. So maybe $5 for this on the App Store is reasonable.
I could see $5. I could see $10. I don't think I could see more than that.
We'll see. So December 20th. But, you know, as I mentioned in the article, The way things seem to be working on the App Store is stuff just comes out day early, so don't be surprised if it sneaks out on the evening of the 19th on the App Store, or maybe really late in the day on the 20th, like who knows. So
you know what's interesting too about this is that years ago there was somebody that like made the unofficial portal port through Unity.
Yeah, we posted about
that
it.
That worked on iPhone. And it's interesting because you mentioned like, okay, you know, first-person shooters aren't like the greatest thing for touchscreen, so maybe that wouldn't be that great of a, you know, Portal wouldn't be a great game to just release as is with touchscreen controls or whatever. This is kind of like a nice compromise to get Portalness built into something that's built for touchscreens that works well on touchscreens. But that said, damn, I still want a Portal port for iPhone. And I think there's enough first-person shooters out there that there'd be an audience for it, and maybe not quite the audience that would be super into Bridge Constructor, Portal crossover, whatever.
I'm trying to find that stupid Portal game that someone made.
It was pretty cool. You probably even had a playable build of it, if I
remember. So, sorry. It was just like some weird little fan project.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how we came across it. I think they emailed us or something like that. And we're like, hey, we built Portal, you know, for the iPhone. Do you want to check it out? And I was like, yeah. And it was a, you know, I don't mean to be mean about it, but it was a reasonably jank.
It was rough.
game. Like it was definitely like it worked. Like the Portal mechanics worked and like the puzzles worked and everything else. But you could tell that it was like very, very, very Unity prototype-y, I guess.
No, I agree. And I think I agree that first-person shooters in general, they're typically fast-paced and twitchy and stuff like that, and that doesn't translate super well to touchscreen controls. But Portal is first and foremost like a puzzle game, and I think like 95% of that game would be fine with touch controls. There's a few levels where you have to do stuff that's kind of complicated. You have to maybe, you know, shoot something and jump into a portal at the same time or whatever, you know, where the virtual controls might let you down. But I think by and large, it would still be a good thing to port to iPhone if Valve ever decided they wanted to. I think it would be really cool.
Oh, here we go. So I found the story via Engadget. It was
thanks, Engadget.
Well, it's a better search than we do, I guess, on Google. Well, it's also because I titled this article something stupid. Well, this was before the days where you had to analyze every stupid thing you wrote on the internet with like maximum search crap. So the title of the article.
Jeez, this is July of 2009.
Yeah, the cake may be a lie, but this video exists.
So you got a clever chuckle out of that, but the search results are awful.
Yeah, just absolutely. So it's called Portal Prelude. But yeah, it worked. I don't know. And the crazy thing is, like, we have a hands-on video on our YouTube channel about this. And randomly, when I feel like just hating myself for the rest of the day and look at our YouTube comments and messages and stuff like that, we will still get people that are responding to that video and being like, hey, yo, send me APK, send me IPA, kind of thing.
That's
right. So yeah, some very, very ancient App Store history for you. So December 20th, we're super stoked for Portal Bridge Constructor. So hopefully more news as it happens. Let's blast through these other stories real quick so we can get to some games. So real quick, Ingress Prime is coming. It's Niantic is rebooting its first kind of like real world AR game, which, I mean, I don't know. That's cool. I'm kind of curious to see how much of this is going to be like shared tech with the upcoming Harry Potter game.
Yeah.
Like if it's not like if the way they're not going to do it this time around is being like, oh, hey, you know, check out Ingress Prime. It's this new thing. Everyone play it. And then when the Harry Potter game comes out, it's like, oh, hey, this is a reskinned Ingress Prime. That's neat. Yeah.
I don't know. I bet there would be a lot of that, and that makes sense. But I also think that maybe the first Ingress was popular, but not Pokemon Go popular.
Yeah.
And so I think this might be a way for them to capture people that might have been interested in the gameplay of Pokemon Go, but maybe got turned off by the Pokemon aspect.
Yeah, maybe. So this is launching next year, so no real news beyond, hey, this is the thing that's happening, and we have a very vague teaser trailer that basically shows nothing.
Yeah.
So the Her Story, the creator of Her Story has announced a game called Pound War Games. or I guess what is how do you
Hashtag.
hashtag war games? I guess that
I
shows how
guess.
old I am.
Tic
So
tac toe board.
yeah, pound sign war games. It's a another kind of game like super sort of so it's based on War Games the movie, I guess, but it's
Yeah.
gonna kind of follow along with kind of like the full motion video gameplay of her story, which
Well, I
hey.
actually think it's also I think it's like the brand of war games that was a movie from the 80s, but I think it's actually taking place in, you know, modern times, and it's going to deal with, you know, the crazy hacks that have happened over the last few years and stuff like that. But we likened it to that Mosaic by Steven Soderbergh that just came out maybe a month or so ago, that was like this crazy interactive film experience sort of thing, which is something that I think will probably kind of catch on and become more popular, you know, given that everyone has iPhones and stuff like that. But I think it'll be something along those lines, where it's a interactive story. You're able to kind of, it's like a full motion video, choose your own adventure, I guess.
So I don't know, I mean, like, I'm excited for this. Her story was awful cool.
Yeah.
Add war games, or I'm sorry, pound signed war games.
And it hasn't been confirmed for mobile or anything like that, but I think it's pretty likely it'll come to mobile.
It wouldn't surprise me if they follow the same release schedule as The Witness and every other Steam game, where juice all cash from everything else before going to mobile. So HQ Live Trivia, if you haven't fiddled around with this, it's awfully cool. It's like a episode of Black Mirror almost. Real time, smartphone, what game show kind of thing with a real host and all that stuff. It's been blown up on iOS, and it's coming to Android. They're kind of being vague about when it's coming, but they refer to it as a stocking stuffer. So maybe before Christmas, for Christmas, on Christmas, who knows? Anyway, check it out. It's really cool. Critical Ops, which I guess the best way to describe this game is it's Counter-Strike, but for mobile. A very lively community and a bunch of updates and stuff like that. They just added a new map that looks pretty neat, and they have an in-game friend chat system, so it makes it a little bit easier to keep track of and play with your friends. So if you play Critical Ops, be sure to download the new update. The new Hearthstone expansion, Kobolds and Catacombs, launched today. Well, I guess when it launched yesterday, if you're listening to this on Friday. 135 new cards, the free to play kind of roguelike dungeon run mode. It's pretty cool. I still haven't opened my card packs yet because I've been so busy. I'm very excited to do that this weekend or whenever I get time. So yeah, Hearthstone's awesome, so check that out. And you posted this today. This the Quest Giver game looks awful neat. So like the basic gist is what was that game where you don't play as the adventurer, but you play as the dude that runs the shop?
Well, there was the Holy Potatoes, the weapon shop game that
Yeah.
was kind of recent. It was sort of the same thing. And then there was, what was that one where you're like, you were the traveling caravan or whatever? Gosh, I can't remember the name of it, but there's been a few games that kind of like focus on a aspect of a genre that's not normally the focus.
Yeah.
And so this game, it's kind of cool. You're not the hero in an RPG, but you're the guild owner, and you're the one creating quests so that heroes can come in and go complete a quest and come get paid from you or whatever. And so you have it's more of like a simulation style game
It kind of
of
seemed to me like it was giving me vibes of like a really clever kind of like idle game, sort of like almost click, like a very creative clickery kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sort of interested to see, like, I think it'll be deeper than that, like more simulation than just, you know, an idle game. But I think, you
Well, I
know,
guess
it'll
a
be,
progress game, I should say,
yeah,
more accurately.
but it'll be kind of interesting to see like what parameters you get to control, and you know, kind of what you can do to fail as a guild owner. I mean, can you create quests that just suck so bad that heroes don't want to complete them or something like that? So I don't know, it's an interesting sort of little space to explore. But it's a ways off. Desktop release is supposed to be mid-2018, and then mobile some nebulous time after that. So we won't even be probably talking about this one until this time next year. But it's a cool idea. I thought the trailer was cool. They recently did a Kickstarter that failed, which is a bummer. But they're still making the game anyway, so we'll see how
What
it goes.
worries me about this is how it seems like a very, very cool idea, and they've been very open about the idea, which in the world of mobile,
someone will come along and do it before next year.
someone will just take that idea and execute it on it before you can do it. So anyway, that's like the news stories I got for the week. So let's buzz into some of the games. I think so many good games this week, it's gonna be hard to pick which ones to talk about, but let's get into Getting Over It, because this game is just bananas.
This is super right up my alley, because I love wacky weird physics games and stuff. But
you're sitting in a cauldron, right? Like, what is the gist of this to you?
Yeah, you are in a cauldron, so you're essentially just a half a man. And you have a giant sledgehammer type thing, and that is the only way that you're able to move yourself. And your object, the object of the game, is to kind of traverse this rocky terrain and climb this giant mountain that's filled with all sorts of nooks and crannies and stuff. And your control is basically, you control the head of the hammer, and you use it to either push yourself forward or to snag onto something and kind of hook yourself up to stuff. Oh, you're
controlling the head of the hammer?
Yes.
Oh, this makes 1,000,000% more sense to me now.
Yeah. It's super wacky idea. I have no idea who would ever have thought of something like this, but it's from the guy that made Quap, so that should tell you something. But anyway, the funny thing about this game is it was very explicitly designed to be super frustrating and anger-inducing. And there's even warnings during the game that's like, hey, if you had a bad day or something, like, maybe just play this another time or whatever, which I think is super funny, because there's lots of, like, reaction videos online of people that are playing the desktop version that, you know, you get super far, and it's very, very tricky to even make a little progress in this game, because it just throws these crazy obstacles at you. And in a lot of situations, it seems like it's going to be impossible for me to climb this thing that the game now wants me to climb. But the, you know, physics system is so nuanced that you can actually find ways around things that seem impossible, either by flinging yourself or, you know, doing whatever. Sometimes you just got to rattle the hammer around and just see what happens. But it's funny, the more I play it, the more comfortable I get with, you know, moving my guy around. It's just really, really kind of an interesting game. But yeah, the whole hook of it is that you can get super, super far up the mountain and then make one screwed up move and fall all the way down to the bottom and have to start all over. And there's no checkpoints or anything stupid like that. I mean, you got to just deal with it. And so it's kind of like, I think it's a lot of commentary on, you know, overcoming these sort of difficult situations and persevering and not giving up and all that good stuff. But it also is very deliberately made to piss you off. And there's a lot of videos online that support that. So I don't know. It's just such a cool game, such a cool idea. I love stuff like this. I'm sure a ton of people will, you know, play it and be like, I don't get it, or I think this is annoying and frustrating and I hate it, or well, whatever.
This totally changed the game for me when you told me what you're controlling is the head of the hammer. Like, that was not how I was, like, mentally kind of imagining. Like, I thought you were controlling the arms of the guy.
Yeah, no. Use the hammer.
And I was like, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, the control method just seemed weird. But, like, if you imagine it as, like, you're just specifically moving the head of the hammer, it makes so much more sense.
And it actually translates well to a touchscreen. I think you use the mouse on a desktop, if I'm not mistaken. So, It's a good touchscreen game once you learn the ins and outs of what you're able to do and kind of get familiar with the physics and gravity and stuff. You can actually do a lot of really neat things. But yeah, it's one of those games, like, it's happened to me a couple times already where, and I'm very not far in this game at all, but there's been a couple things where I've made it over this part that I tried forever to get past. And then, you know, I move on to the next part and then screw up, and then I'm back where I started. And it's just like a humbling experience. So, I don't know. This game clicked with me super well, but it's definitely not going to be for everyone. You're doing well. Valiant attempts at getting. This was a tricky part for me early on. Yeah, so it gets hard right off the bat.
I'm on like a mountain cliff that has like these things hanging out, and I need to like hook my hammer on it and like fling myself up and over, I guess.
Yeah. One of my suggestions. The other funny thing about this game is that. It's from Bennett Foddy, who I said did Quap, and he made this for the Humble Bundle in October as a desktop game. And Zach Gage and Matt Bach, I believe, who Zach Gage is obviously, he's Spelltower and Flip Flop Solitaire and all that good stuff. And Matt Bach is also in the games industry and has worked for some big companies and stuff. They were out with Bennett Foddy talking about this game, and they were basically like, we think it would translate really well to mobile. You should make a mobile version. Bennett Foddy's like, no. And they were like, they had some sort of bet where they bet him that if he gave them permission to port it, that they could port it in whatever amount of time, which was a couple of weeks or something like that.
Jared, are you watching these? I just flinged myself all the way up the stupid mountain and fell down.
That's why this game is amazing, is you do these incredible feats like that.
This game is the worst and the best.
Yes, the worst. I would describe it like that too. But anyway, so they basically bet him that they could make a mobile port in a certain amount of time, which they did, and they released it, and here it is. So I'm very happy that Bennett Foddy's friends believed in the game enough that they wanted to see it on mobile too. And I hope it does really well. It's weird. It's $5, which you might think is crazy because it's such a simple sort of game. And, you know, especially with the potential that it might completely piss you off to where you throw your phone, you might be bummed that you paid $5 for that. I don't know.
No. Going all the way down to the bottom.
That's this game. So anyway, I don't know. I love it. I think it's totally worth the $5. I don't think anyone's ever going to beat the game. I don't even know if there is an end, but, I think there is actually, but anyway, if you like super frustrating games, but ones that come with immense satisfaction when you finally do make progress, this is that sort of game.
Or if you just like muscly men in cauldrons.
Which is valid, too. That's worth $5 right there.
Yeah, that's something.
But my suggestion to Zach Gage is the one who helped port this to mobile, and he's been in our forums kind of helping answer questions and stuff. And I was like, hey, I really want a portrait mode. Because
it doesn't do portrait mode,
huh? I feel like the one button or, you know, the one thumb controls of portrait games feels very similar to how you swing the hammer around in this game. It almost mimics a thumb movement. And so what I've actually been doing is I've been playing this game in portrait just sideways and feels so much better than trying to play it with a fingertip or whatever. That I felt compelled. I wanted to ask if it would even be possible to add portrait mode support to this, because I feel like it'd be the ultimate one thumb, one handed game. Haven't heard anything about that yet, but hopefully that's something that comes. But it is kind of funny that you can play this game in portrait now. It's just everything sideways and gravity flows to the left and you sort of get used to that. But, oh God, keep going. Go, Eli.
I'm
doing well.
Get up this stupid mountain, you dumb hammer man. Oh God.
My God. Oh, you're killing it.
Oh, fuck. Sorry, audio people. I'm having a moment on.
Yeah, sorry, people. You know what? If there's ever a month to throw us a dollar and get the video version of this podcast, this is it.
Jerry, I can't play this anymore. Let's move on to a different game.
Anyway,
it's too stressful.
Getting over it. It's super awesome. Good mobile port. You should focus on it.
So let's talk about amazing Katamari Damacy.
I haven't played this yet.
So it's actually, I think I know why it was soft launch for eternity, and that's because their monetization in this is just completely asinine.
Right.
So it's basically, the easiest way to describe this game is imagine if you could combine Temple Run and Katamari.
Mm-hmm.
That's this game. So it's a behind the back runner where you use an invisible virtual joystick of sorts to move your what is your dude called, the prince of all cosmos, right? Something like that. I don't remember.
The prince.
Move him around, and you pick up little things. Like at the start, you don't have very many items unlocked, so I'm like, right now I'm picking up screws and like dice and things like that to make my Katamari. There's like swipe controls for jumping, and as far as I think the only thing that can kill you is running into things to the point that like all of your stuff falls off and you can no longer pick things up, or getting these weird black portal things that spawn. If you go into one of those, you die instantly. They're like cosmic black holes or something like that. So I don't know. I mean, like what kills me about it is that it's not a bad game. It's just like very, very derivative. It's like someone was just like, oh, just take this game, but make a Katamari.
Yeah.
Which I guess isn't the worst.
Well, I think part of the fun of, I mean, first of all, I think that this idea on paper makes a lot of sense. Like Katamari, you're rolling a ball, you're rolling a bunch of junk up into a big ball, and you're running throughout the whole game. So making it like a fixed perspective behind the back runner while you run around and collect a big ball of junk, that fits. That's like a mobilized version of Katamari, which makes sense to me. But I think the fun part of the traditional Katamari games is like your ball gets so crazy and unwieldy, and then you start to pick up these crazy objects and stuff like that. So I don't know if you've gotten far enough in this game or not, but if your ball gets a certain size, does
Yeah,
it
it
like get
scales
more
up.
challenging?
It scales up. So you start. So I've been able to start on the Wiimote's like tabletop, picking up small items to the point that you fall off the table and you're picking up junk on the floor, like shoes and
Okay.
things like that. And
That's
then,
similar to the other game.
yeah, I got to a point where I was like outside and picking up like cats and dogs and stuff before I failed. But the way the monetization in this works is kind of dumb. Like, so there's continues that you can pay for, but they are, I don't know, I feel like kind of expensive. And then there's like you collect this stuff that gives you, like there's a Clash Royale kind of like chess system, and that you collect stuff in game that powers up your rockets, which you can then launch. And like I have a 3 hour rocket that I can launch, which is gonna give me 6 to 14 star fragments, which I don't really know what that's gonna do. And then like as soon as I did that, it popped up a full screen ad. So that one's cooking. I guess you can only have one rocket like firing at a time, so I have a another one that's counting down. Like everything, like the part, like I think they were like very desperately trying to figure out like, okay, so we have a gameplay loop that's cool and it makes sense and it's a gameplay formula that works on the App Store, but how do we get people to give us money for it? And you can, it's obvious that it was soft launched so long because like it's so kludgy. Like everything about the in-game economy stuff just feels like it was just like thrown together based on A/B tests and more analytics until they were just like, all right, I don't know, this one does the best. Like it's stupid, but like people are doing it, so just run with it, I guess. So I don't know. And you can, so you pick up your little cousin dudes to do your different power ups, so you can get like more score multiplier, a shield. You can blast through objects, and there's a magnet thing. Basically, like standard fare power ups for these kind of like endless runner sort of games. There's a special offer that you can get a bunch of shit for $2, coin doubler for $5. I don't know. It's a very much free to play game. Like I almost wonder if this game wouldn't do better if it was like, it's like, hey, here's this game. We're gonna just load it full of oppressive ads, or you can pay $10 and unlock the ad-free version, or something else like that. Because like the core gameplay is really cool, but what's gonna kill me and stop me from playing it is like all the interstitial ads and weird sub-menus and weird systems and stuff like that. Like if I could just pay $10 for this game, it would be really cool. And it would probably stay on my phone for a really long time instead of me kind of already being over it, only having played it for like a half hour or 45 minutes maybe. So
Interesting.
there.
I have such fatigue for that stuff that it almost doesn't matter what the game is anymore, how much I like it. It's just like I can't, I see the road ahead of all the stuff I need to collect and upgrade and blah blah blah. And I just am like, I don't know, I'm gonna go play Grid.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool, but it is what it is. I still recommend just downloading it and to check it out. I mean, because like it's a free game, and if nothing else, it'll make you be like, damn, I wish this was just a paid game.
You know
So
what's funny is, do you remember there's been a couple
several
normal Katamari
Katamari
games
games,
on,
yeah.
but I remember the hardware could never keep up because your ball would get to a certain size and everything would just break
It
down.
makes me wonder if they re-released that one that was like an actual real Katamari game now, but like, didn't do anything other than like make it run on modern devices if it wouldn't just like kill it on the iPhone 10.
It probably would.
Because I remember that game, that must have been like the iPhone 3GS days, I think, when that came out. It was like such a cool game, and then you would roll like 10 things up and your phone would be running at like 3 frames per second. So.
Katamari Amore, was that it?
I don't know.
There's definitely been a couple of, oh yeah, 2011, jeez.
Jeez.
Yeah, imagine if they just re-release this with update for new phones.
Yeah. So Reigns for Majesty came out this week. I feel like we've talked about it a ton on previous podcasts, but if not, we have just a ridiculous amount of content up on the site about it between like previews, review. We got a guide up that'll allow you to find all the best endings of the game, which I don't know. I would at least play through it once.
I feel bad because I know that guide is going to be a lot of people are going to be looking for a guide like that. But I also feel like it just wrecks the fun part of the game is finding out all the weird secrets and stuff, which was one of the coolest things about the first game. So,
well, to be fair, though, like the good ending requires you to do some awfully obtuse things. So I would
same with the first game. Yeah,
definitely play through it to the point that because you can get to like an ending reasonably easy just by kind of like following the game and, you know, making, you know, good decisions and stuff like that. Like, you know, it'll take you, you know, maybe a week of playing it casually or whatever to reach like an end. Like, it won't be the good end, but it'll be like a conclusion to the game. Yeah. So at that point, if you hit that point and you're like, all right, well, I don't know, like I can't figure out what this game wants me to do or whatever else, then check out the guide, I think. But I wouldn't spoil the whole thing for yourself unless you want to. But
not right off the bat. No, I agree. And you know, it's one thing to know what to do, the secret things to do and stuff like that, and it's another thing to actually do them in your own game, because a lot of it comes down to you know, luck or making the right decisions and stuff like that. So just knowing it doesn't necessarily mean that you're gonna do that right away. So
I don't know, I don't want to get too spoilery into you know, what constitutes the good ending versus the bad ending, and none of the endings are bad. It's just video game nomenclature, basically. But like, Reigns was outstanding. And the new Reigns is even better. But like, what's cool about this game, though, is I feel like it deviates from the Reigns formula just enough in interesting ways, in that you're playing the Queen, that I feel like the main original Reigns is still very much worth playing.
And yeah, I like that.
Have them both on your phone, because it feels like so often when a sequel comes out for a game, there's like no reason to go back to the original one, because the sequel is so much better and improves on so much ways that like it's even difficult sometimes, even if you wanted to go back and play the first one, because it feels so old. But like, this really just feels like Reigns, I don't know, like 1.8, I guess. Like not like a complete sequel to the point where like the game doesn't matter anymore, but like a total kind of expansion pack rework thing that can stand on its own, I guess, is how I would describe it. So
it'd be cool if the game would know that you have the original Reigns already and you could just unlock it into this game and then just have
one game. I was thinking about how cool it would be if these games could kind of like work together on each other and like do like the Sega lock-on technology almost kind of thing.
That's what we need.
You know, maybe not any like super meaningful ways, but like, you know, if you had reached a certain point in Reigns for Majesty, like maybe there would be just be like tiny callbacks when you go to play Reigns, and you know, like say if you bought a like, you know, you eventually got had an explorer and like owned a boat as your queen in Reigns for Majesty, like if they made just, you know, subtle nods to like, you know, the fact that you bought a boat or, you know, owned a boat or something, like, I don't know, like, that'd be cool. But anyway, Reigns, really good. It's one of these games that like I've successfully been able to recommend to absolutely everyone that even has an iPhone that really doesn't care about games, because it's very, very, very easy to wrap your head around like the primary concept of the game, of, you know, basically just binary decisions as a king or queen. I don't know. Check it out. I don't need to talk about it too much more. I feel like I've been writing about Reigns for nonstop. I also have a really cool interview up with Jim Guthrie, who was made the soundtrack for the game, up to date too. So if you're into behind the scenes kind of stuff, he also did the Sword and Sorcery soundtrack. So super cool dude. We've known him forever. So
yeah.
For the last game of the podcast, because we're running kind of long, do you want to do this Collins boxing game?
I haven't played it yet. So
this is pretty cool.
What I was excited for this one.
What is the full title of it? Because the
Big Shot Boxing, I believe.
Okay, so Big Shot Boxing. So what's interesting about this game is that it is, so this developer is very good at releasing these kind of like awkward physics games, right?
Yeah. And he made Dunkers and what are the golfing ones? Golf is Hard and just a bunch of sports based wacky physics games.
But they're all kind of like adorably kind of shitty, right? Like that's kind of like the I shouldn't say shitty, but like adorably kind of like
they're almost sort of like EnviroBear, where the controls and the physics are just so crazy that it makes the game absurdly fun or whatever. But they're also very they're all very like arcade experiences, like, you know, either battling or going for a high score or whatever. There's never really a super meaningful progression in most of his games.
And so this one sort of,
yeah, this one sort of bucks the trend because it has such a like beefy career mode and stuff.
So yeah, like the way that this works is very, very, very similar kind of like, you know, a purposefully jank physics wacky game, but with what feels like more real graphics, and that it looks like an actual like boxing game, and there's a ton of depth to the like progression system of like managing and leveling up your boxer and making it through the ranks and stuff.
And even though it doesn't look like it, there's a lot of strategy to the actual boxing. It's not just like weird physics based button mashing, which I would say is a lot of, you know, the appeal of stuff like Dunkers.
Yeah. So to move forward, you jab, but you can't like actually move your dude. So like when your punches have inertia, and that's what kind of like moves your guy back and forth. So it's kind of like a Rock'em Sock'em Robots kind of thing in a way. And then to move backwards, you block, and then you have a cross shot and a uppercut as well. So those are your other kind of two shots. And like you can kind of like, if you can kind of like get into sparring with your opponent, predicting what you're doing, like you can really technically box, which is kind of a lot of fun. Because it really blends like that weird sort of like jank physics model sort of style of gameplay that's like purposely obtuse and weird with what feels like a real game.
Yeah.
Not to say the other games are real, but you know, like a more full like game experience, and not like this is a fun physics toy game, right?
Well, there's definitely, this is a game he's been working on for a long time on the side of releasing a lot of smaller games. And it seems like there's like a really heavy like simulation aspect to it.
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, the strategy of the boxing itself and stuff like that. So I don't know, cool all around. Like what a neat game from somebody that's usually releasing stuff that's a little more, I don't know, breezy, I guess.
Like I would say like he releases like more like what I would describe as like kind of like mobile centric micro game kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this feels like a more depthy, meaty kind of game experience, which is, you know, bucks the trend of what he usually does, but I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
And I really hope that people support this game and check it out, because it is a lot of fun. The physics, it just blends that weird physics thing together so well with just a minor progression system that's enough to just keep you going.
And so another aspect of this game, which I thought was cool, is there's a lot of randomness injected into it, which he basically describes as like you can win or lose a fight at any time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much you're beating up the other dude. He can throw a punch that just lays you off and that's it. And that's sort of what just happened to you now.
Yeah.
Is you've been wailing on this guy and he's beat up, but he just threw a punch that knocked you straight down.
But that's how boxing is, though. I mean, like how
Yeah, that's what I like. I like that.
Like someone that just random gets element. Just a good punch in at the right time and you just you know, hit the mat. So, but yeah, this what's full title again?
Big Shot Boxing, I believe.
Big Shot Boxing. Like, definitely check it out. So I think that is going to be our podcast for the week this week. Thank you very much for listening. Next 2 weeks are going to be kind of weird for us because we're going to have, two more weeks of game releases and the iTunes freeze.
Yeah.
Then that's when we put out all our best end of the year game stuff.
Christmas is on a Monday, so I was thinking that we'd probably maybe do a normal podcast that week before and then post our best game stuff that Friday, or at least our game of the year pick and stuff on Friday, and let it just sit there all weekend through Monday.
Seems like it makes sense. I really wonder, kind of what I was thinking. From a
an SEO perspective, if we didn't mess up this year, but what I've seen a lot of sites doing now is like, oh, here's all the games we're considering.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know,
or game of the year number 10, number 9, number 8, at least a new one each day or whatever.
A bunch of people being like, oh shit, we're on the list of games we're considering, tweeting it like crazy and stuff, instead of just being like one day where it's like, bam, here's all the best games, go wild.
Well, so, as it is right now, we are planning on doing what we did last year with the top 100 games of the year, which seems like so absurd, but I promise you there's more than 100 great
games. That's the crazy thing always.
Like, but it's always fun. I like doing a list that big because I feel like you can throw a lot of different types of games in there, and that pretty much everybody will be able to find a handful of stuff that they maybe didn't know about or stuff that they'll enjoy no matter what kind of games they typically like. So yeah. I like doing that big list.
For sure.
But that, that it basically is a list of consideration too. Like, should we release these 500 games are being considered for our top 100.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. Mobile is weird.
Yeah.
But it is actually interesting. I guess we can talk about this real quick if you want. Is how you kind of were mentioning this in Discord today, how interesting it is that the like real games, like PC console game sites, are kind of going through the same stuff that we went through like years ago with figuring out how to handle kind of year-end stuff when there are so many amazing games and so many of those games are like weird game as a service game where like, maybe it launched last year and the game is really bad and it got updated a bunch and now it's something that people actually play in one of the best games of the year, but technically it was released in 2016, so it doesn't count as a 2017 game even though it got good in 2017.
Yeah, and we've had that problem forever because we're like, Hearthstone, when it first came out on mobile, I mean, it took a long time for it to get big. Or even something like Angry Birds that didn't get popular for, you know, 6 months after it came out. It came out in like the fall of 2009 or something, but didn't get popular until March of 2010 or something like that. And so it's like, what should that count as 2010 game of the year, even though it came out in 2009? And then a lot of talk is around PUBG, which is technically not even officially released. It's still an early access game, but it's like the most popular thing on the planet. And so should that be excluded from being in game of the year stuff or not?
Yeah.
I don't know. Those are all super valid questions, but it's just funny to me because it's something we've dealt with.
Like we went through that like 2010, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's just been funny watching that go down on Twitter. But anyway, so thanks a ton for listening. If you like the show, like what we do, there's two primary ways that we would love it if you would support us so we can keep doing what we're doing. The first is Patreon. We can find our Patreon at patreon.com/TouchArcade. The second is you do your Amazon shopping through TouchArcade.com/Amazon, especially if you do a lot of your Amazon shopping for Christmas and stuff. Like, we'd really appreciate it if you do it through that. We just basically we get the referral fees that Amazon would otherwise just keep themselves. So you don't pay any more. Instead, we just get a small cut of your purchases, which if you're doing Christmas shopping could be substantial. So that'd be awesome if you could think of us. We also stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/TouchArcade. We've got Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade. And if you like the show, we always appreciate iTunes reviews or just telling your friends about it. Word of mouth is a really good way to get more people to listen to podcasts. So podcast@toucharcade.com if you want to email us. Otherwise, we will catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.